Welcome to Teachers Teaching Teachers. It is October 10th, 2012, and we have some feedback, but we'll figure it out as we go. Everyone has earbuds. Yep, looks like it. Maybe it's Amy. We'll just mute her for a second and we'll see what happens. All right, so welcome to Teachers Teaching Teachers. We have invited a group of people who are, I said in email, are on the verge of jumping into Youth Voices or have jumped into Youth Voices already. Chris Sloan is with us. Chris and I started this site, Chris, almost 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Believe it or not, which is ancient in internet terms. But we are always excited about people who come and go and people who come back and people who are ready to start. And I think we actually have three people here who are ready to throw their students on here. And we have Eric Hoffler as well. And Eric, we're going to start with introducing yourself a little bit and how you might be interested to join this community again. Welcome back. You've been a tech liaison with the Writing Project, where you are and so forth, and you've been doing other things for a few years, but you're back in a school.
Right. Yeah, I taught for about 9 years in Northern Virginia at the high school level and worked as a tech liaison with the Northern Virginia Writing Project up there since about, 2001. And left the classroom for a little while, did some work in private industry with tech work, but continued to stay on as tech liaison and try to support the Writing Project through all that. And now I'm back in the schools. I'm down in Richmond in Henrico County working as instructional technology resource teacher, which basically means I work with all of the teachers in the building, and mainly we're housed at a building, but we do float a little bit. But I work with the teachers in the building and try to help them think of ways to use technology effectively in their classrooms. And part of the struggle there is that my job really isn't to teach them how to push the buttons, although that's often what it starts out as. But ultimately, it's to kind of try to move beyond that and think about, okay, now you know how to push these buttons. Why would you push them? How can you use this effectively? How can you help students with these tools? And so I think, you know, with Youth Voices, this is a great opportunity for some of those teachers if I can hook them in and say, okay, so here's a great resource, not only for you, but for your students, and how could we get them active in that, and how would that impact their learning? So great to be back.
Thank you. I've been looking for you actually very boldly sent an email and out to everybody saying, I'm coming back, welcome me back. So it's nice that you were able to welcome me back here.
Thank you very much.
And if anybody's listening to this, why would they want to listen to it? I was wondering that as you're talking. Because this is, and want to say that Teachers Teaching Teachers, kind of from the beginning, was an open staff room, is one of the ways we thought about some of the shows. That, you know, if we had a staff meeting and invited the world to jump in if they wanted to, that's what we'd be doing. So treat this like we're planning together, working problems out together. And I hope people will, even if they're not using Youth Voices, will kind of think about, you know, online publishing, working in a school-based social network or whatever, and pick up some tips and ideas as we go here. Jeremy, welcome. Introduce yourself a little bit. We got some of your students on in the summertime, and at least one so far this fall. But go ahead.
My name is Jeremy Heiler. I am a 7th and 8th grade language arts teacher. I am the middle school language arts teacher in my district. I am a teacher consultant for the Chippewa River Writing Project that's directed by Troy Hicks. And I've been doing a lot of technology-based learning in my classroom for the last two and a half years, and was first introduced by Youth Voices by Troy, and kind of did a test run this past summer with a summer camp And I've started getting some of my students memberships, I guess, for they're now members of Youth Voices. And I've got one student on there that has posted something. And we've just had another conversation today, at least with my eighth graders, about getting onto Youth Voices. And we're going to continue to push forward with that over the course of the next week. The thing that's kind of holding us back right now is we're doing our state standardized testing. So it's been kind of difficult to get into Youth Voices. And I've been kind of gnawing at the bit to get the kids on there because I want them to, as I've mentioned before in past sessions, I want them to get out of their little bubble. They're a very small community. I want them to get out into the world. I want them to be this part of this bigger community of writers. I want them to get online, and I want them to see the potential that they have as writers, that they can get feedback from other writers of their own age, especially with the new channel, with the middle channel that's on there. I'm hoping that my kids can participate in that. And tonight's going to be a really good opportunity for me because right now what I'm struggling with is I'm struggling with how can I fit this into my curriculum? Because right now it's almost like a extra thing for my kids, and they're kind of not, it's not that they're bucking me on it, but they're just not that interested because, well, Mr. Heiler's not assigning it as something they have to do, but yet it's something extra without there being a carrot there. I mean, we talked about the badge system today and everything in class, so, and there was kind of some head nods, and there was some other, I really don't care what you're talking about, my brain's fried from standardized testing, so, this is going to be a very good learning experience, and I actually would like to take this back, this session, and I'd like to show the kids what we talked about tonight, so they can kind of get a better idea of Youth Voices.
Cool. Those are really good problems. One of the things we also want to do is just check in with you with what you're doing. So could you tell us about the memoir project a little bit? And then we'll go more detail later. But
yeah, the Common Core focuses on three specific areas of writing: the narrative, the argumentative, and the informational. And I started the year with the narrative unit, and we're pushing through that narrative unit. And one of the projects that the eighth graders had to do was they had to write some memoirs, and they had to write a memoir from a personal experience in the past. And the students did some brainstorming. We actually did some word clouds online, and we did a bunch of other activities as well to get their focus narrowed down to a specific event in their life. And then they had to write this memoir, and in this memoir they had to include some dialogue, and there were some other guidelines that had to fit in there that was lined up with the Common Core. I've got all of their memoirs via Google Docs right now because I have a paperless classroom. What I've been doing is encouraging students to share their memoirs, whether it's a six-word memoir, whether it's a Twitter memoir, or whether it's their great big huge long memoir. I've encouraged them to share that on Youth Voices so that they can get some feedback from other people, not just their classmates.
Mm-hmm. So, and I'll bring up one other issue. There's a teacher who was on Youth Voices a couple of years ago, Charlie Friege, and he may or may not be able to join us here tonight. But from Brooklyn, from East Brooklyn Community High School, I think it's called. And Charlie's this wonderful teacher, and the first project he had, they're transfer high school students, so they're quite a bit older than your students, but they're writing what they call indelible moments, which I think are similar to memoirs. So, like, when that happens, how we can communicate with each other and say, your kids might want to go read their indelible moments, because my kids are looking at those and saying, what are these? You know, because that's not where their head is. But your kids might be kind of prepped for that in a nice way.
Yeah.
So we have to think about helping make those connections.
Absolutely.
Great. Thank you. And Jim Nordlinger, welcome.
Yes. Hi. Welcome to you. Okay. I'm Jim Nordlinger. I teach at the Bronx High School for the Visual Arts. I've been last year taught seniors. I used Youth Voices a fair amount with some success at very nice as an excellent motivator and people willing to rewrite and do things that I thought they wouldn't have otherwise. So I'm now teaching mostly ninth grade, a freshman writing course, and I'd really like to. I haven't yet been able to set up my classroom with the electronic needs or whatever, the equipment and all that. But I'm looking forward to doing using youth voices again, and very much the badge system I want to tie to along the lines of how to use it in the curriculum, because our school's very regents, that the demands for passing the regents and whether the school's going to survive or not is crucial. So I'm trying to figure out how to tie the badge system into a more regents level kinds of things without entirely destroying it for the students. So I'm how to tie it to curriculum a little bit, but also I want them to enjoy it and share, the same motivation for sharing things. I really like when we worked last Saturday, two Saturdays ago, with the working before you publish in PU and all that stuff, seems enormously helpful. I'm excited about the badge system and all of that stuff as, tying it to somehow to curriculum. I keep repeating myself, but that seems like a major challenge. Other than getting computers into the classroom, that's the, I feel bound to somehow tie, the school's under such pressure to survive right now, so that it feels important to somehow ease, scaffold into higher, more challenging material. They get, I've been working for several years with a social studies teacher, and we've developed this humanities program that seemed to work quite well in, easing the students into more historical material through personal things. I've done lots of memoirs and other things and tried to tie it into historical ideas as well. So it's, I'm very much hoping to be able to use youth voices to tie into real curricular needs and things like that. Is that okay, Paul?
That's a great introduction. No, it sounds okay. Good to me. Yeah.
Okay.
Now, and just want to say also that Jim was part of a study group of six other teachers from the New York City Writing Project, where we tried to, and we got together once a month last spring, and have kind of committed to each other to get together on Saturday mornings as well. And we're going up to Jim's school this Saturday to up. It's a 2 miles up from my school, but it's not up that far. And to help him with looking at those laptops, some of the keyboards are broken, and we don't know what software is on there and all that. So we got some people who know more than I do. One person who knows more than I do coming with us, and so we're going to try to do what we're calling a barn raising in your classroom there. But anyway, and Jack, welcome, Jack Zangerly. I don't know exactly where you live, Jack, but I know that that Jim teaches in the Bronx, but lives up in Westchester. And so, welcome. Introduce yourself. You guys might live close to each other.
Yeah, right.
kind of that close. My name's Jack Zangerly. I'm the eighth grade English teacher at Dover Middle School in Dover Plains, New York, which is about 100 miles north of the city where I work. I live in Wappinger Falls, closer to Poughkeepsie. I grew up in Yonkers, so I probably know where you live. But
right, just north of Yonkers.
So we moved up the line a bit. But similar to what Jeremy was saying earlier, I'm the eighth grade English teacher, so I'm the whole show when it comes to that grade. So that's sort of the interesting dynamic there. And I'm also involved with the Hudson Valley Writing Project. And I work as the technology liaison there. I work closely with Bonnie Kaplan, and we have a once a month technology team that meets. We're actually going to be going down to at Columbia at the end of the month. We're pretty excited about that. What's it called? Drawing a blank for a minute. One of the unconferences.
Oh, really? Oh,
cool. Yeah.
I'll have to look into it.
So for about the past year and a half, I've also been working with the Literacy and the Common Core Initiative with the National Writing Project, and developing some Common Core aligned units and whatnot, and work along that with the Literacy Design Collaborative template and everything that goes along with that. And a lot of that work that I did there, I really tried to focus on sort of the relationship between traditional literacies and digital literacies and what that all means when you try to mix it together. And just listening to Jeremy talk before, and he was talking about all the standardized tests that were happening right now, and I had that same exact feeling, like I'm chomping to get ready, like we're ready to do these things, but I just feel like so much has rolled out so slowly this year. It's like we were testing before things happened, and
you know, they were using computers to do all these things because they were using a system that's online for that, or at least computer-based. But it certainly wasn't doing the things that I think we need or want them to be doing. But just that experience, I don't know if anybody's familiar with the NWEA testing. It's all done on the computer. And sort of the proctoring experience of that was like just eye-opening. Watching the students work, kind of walking around the room and reading over their shoulders a little bit, they had to read these tremendously long pieces of text like up on a computer monitor. And I can tell you they're not good monitors. They're not something you would want to read 2 and 3 pages on. And then sort of have to have this interaction and then answer these questions. That's just this really odd dynamic, probably for anybody, let alone for, you know, kids that are probably used to working in a bit of a different way. And sort of what that means.
Yeah, like looking down at their hand.
Yeah. We had a really interesting conversation afterwards. You know, I sort of asked the question, how would you have done this in your life? Like, what would you have done? And their answers went everywhere from, well, I would have just printed that out, to I would have moved it to, you know, and that's on one end, to I would have moved it to whatever the thing is that they would have preferred to read it on. But nobody said I would have read it on this 800 by 600 CRT monitor that they were reading it on. But yet that's where, you know, the important testing was happening. So somewhere we have to try to figure out how to negotiate all that. And that's one of the reasons I'm sort of really interested in what Youth Voices might mean and trying to build that relationship and give them a place to interact in some sort of way outside their small town. Because like you were saying, again, I feel like I keep coming back to you, it is a bit of a small town. So how do we move outside that as well in a place that might feel comfortable for some of the other people that are decision makers too? Because that's something we definitely have to think about. So hoping to learn.
Welcome, Jack. One of these things is not like the others. Welcome, Monica.
You guys are so lucky I showed up. You've been in so much trouble.
We were breaking out the beer and, you know, just hanging out. But you can hang out with us. Welcome. Where are you tonight?
Well, that was the problem. I'm at the public library and they had to block something for, and I just thought it was me, so I was trying to fix it. But I just got a guy to come get me in.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Welcome. And others don't necessarily know, you're in Loveland, Colorado. Yes?
Welcome. So, I am. I don't know if I know anyone.
Yeah, well, you just missed all the introductions, so you want to scroll over and kind of figure it out as we go. But we got Chris, Eric, Jeremy, Jim, myself, Paul, and Jack. So, real simple names here, too. That's cool. Anyway, Monica, we'll catch you up as we go. As you heard those introductions, and we've just spent a third of the show just introducing ourselves, and I think it's always important to kind of say that that's one of the big things that we're doing here is making connections and getting to know each other a little bit. But what's having done that, what are some of the issues that you think we might address together? What do you want to look at on Youth Voices? What are you thinking about? And Chris, you haven't said much yet. Do you want to take that on and say what your kids are up to and what you've been doing so far this year?
Yeah. My name is Chris Sloan, and I teach English and media in Salt Lake City, Utah. And, you know, a lot of the things that people were saying definitely resonate with me. You know, trying to get my hands on the computers is difficult. You know, today I wanted to do a little sequence, but another teacher kind of had dibs on the machines or whatever. So, you know, I went to plan B. So I'm going to be working on that tomorrow. So there's this whole thing of trying to get access to the machines. And then also Jeremy's question of, you know, how do I work it in to the curriculum is something that I think I've done fairly well. So, like, you know, typically what my students will do is whatever they're reading, they'll write about. And so it's not really an intrusion into the curriculum. It's just another place for them to compose. So that works really well for me because my philosophy is if I'm reading everything they're writing, then they're not writing enough. So, you know, if we're reading a book, then they can throw their thoughts out there to, you know, an authentic audience and have some conversations that they just can't have if it's, if they're writing on paper for me. So, you know, like those two things, Paul, I noticed, access and then, you know, how to seamlessly work youth voices in without it being considered like an add-on seem to be pretty big concerns.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then on the horizon, I guess what my guys are going to be up to is political stuff, because it is the election season and I'm going to have them do some mini research around some issues that matter to them. And they'll be writing and discussing those things. And some of them are pretty highly motivated to talk about politics, and some of them would rather not. So be a pretty interesting next month. But that'll be a big focus for us, is writing about what you're reading and then trying to engage with political issues right now.
And what are your students reading?
Right now they're reading 1984, so it works well around election time. For instance, we will read Orwell's Politics in the English Language coming up, and then they'll be looking at language around the politics. And so there's no shortage of spin out there. The other book we read so far was Unspun, Finding Facts in a World of Disinformation is the subtitle. And that's actually a pretty accessible book, even for, I think, middle school. So some of your middle school kids might like to, if you've got those kids who really like to read and they're interested in, you know, nonfiction and propaganda and that kind of stuff. A lot of ninth, eighth and ninth graders are. That's a quick read for them, and they can find a lot to talk about.
Who's the author of that, Chris?
It's from the website factcheck.org. So I think it's Jacobs. Nancy Jacobs, I think, is one of the authors. But I'll put a link to the book in the EdTech Talk.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just dumped it in the chat room.
Oh, you did? Okay, there it is there.
Jack, can you talk a little more about your curriculum? And I want to try to get our heads around, like, what is a curriculum? And, you know, in answering that question, how does it fit in? We all have different notions of what a curriculum is, I think, to some degree. But
yeah, okay. So right now, sort of where we've been so far, we're working on a we have a reading workshop model, so we've been working for the past 5 weeks or so to sort of get a lot of those roots established and get kids comfortable with how they're going to talk about things they're reading and then writing about, and moving through, you know, probably two or three different books at this point, sort of building up to a place where they're then able to sort of write maybe a little bit more full-bodied, you know, review. And in the past, we've had them podcast them or make some kind of little photo story around it as a sort of connection to it. And one of the things I'm sort of hoping with Youth Voices can broaden that audience a little bit. We tend to share a lot of that stuff on private Google sites that are sort of locked behind the little wall. But one of the things I'm really interested in is where we can find a place that'll provide some interactions beyond just that wall, but at the same time have some sort of structure to it. And I'm really intrigued by that whole badge system and what that means and how that might A, motivate, and B, serve as some sort of like scaffold of do this and, you know, of things they need to get done. Right now, sort of, so we're more or less in the midst of some short story studies and author studies. We'll look at some Greek mythology. We're going to look at a little bit of Shakespeare this year, some civil rights literature. That's mm-hmm. where we're going over the course of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And then they will spend some time with public service announcement writing, social issues in the spring. And that's where they build these, we'll make some video presentations or public service announcement videos out of using whatever. I mean, last year we actually used WeVideo tied into Google Drive to do those, which was really interesting and frustrating at the same time.
Yeah, because it costs money pretty fast, doesn't it?
Yeah, but we were able to stay just under that. So we were able to stay under it, but, you know, we were trying to, like, concision and 2 minute communicating a message and all that stuff kind of came into it. So that helped. But if they were to start to do a second project, they would have to dump everything out and move it
on. That was one of those free freemiums that disappeared pretty fast, it seemed to me, in terms of you have to pay it awfully fast. Yeah.
Right, yeah, you got to be careful how much you put in there. I think there's a 5 gigabyte.
Yeah. Please make this conversation jump in as we go, ask questions, and I'll try to address issues.
Right. I mean, some of the things I'm just wondering, like, where to start, literally, like, you know, in terms of uploading, and I don't know how particular we wanted to get in terms of.
We can get as particular as you want. It's a staff meeting, right? And we can. So, have your students registered yet?
No. Do they register on their own, or do I, like, do an upload? So I've seen different models of that.
We can answer that, and anybody who wants to join us can get an answer to that then. What do you think, Chris?
Yeah, I just have the kids. There's a, you know, the top button that says join. I have them join on their own, and then, you know, as a matter of kind of keeping track of things, as they make their first comment or make their first discussion, I grab a hold of their URL, the URL of their biography. Mm-hmm. Then I have a little spreadsheet. So then I have a quick little shortcut to all the little kids.
Oh, that's smart. Like
their work.
With their name right next to it.
Yeah. And Paul, I don't know if there's a similar kind of management kind of tool with the Drupal on the site, because I've just been using a Google spreadsheet on that.
There isn't.
Yeah,
so that's cool.
So that's, I mean, for me, it's kind of keeping track of them. Their work is pretty important from, you know, for a number of reasons.
So they have a certain amount of autonomy in moving around and what they do there.
Yeah. Sometimes I'll start, like, my photography class, you know, they'll post a recent photo that they've taken. In English class, I might start with them reading a bunch of things and making a comment before they post a discussion. So there's different ways into it. And sometimes the comment, I think, is easier than it is to, you know, do their first discussion for some kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say whatever works in terms of registering kids. Another method, well, let me ask you this. Do you guys have Google Docs at your school?
Yeah.
Okay, so your kids all have Google addresses. Addresses.
They have a Google Docs account. They don't have the email. Huh. They're not allowed to use the email portion of it.
Why is that?
I think it's just a district decision.
Okay.
At this point, so that's,
you might check it because that because there's a lot of things to register for, and otherwise, and actually, you know, if you're using the email, then you have some management control over it.
Oh, whereas, yeah, I know.
Whereas otherwise, but others may not. Whereas yeah. Otherwise, you know, there's you don't have any control over it. They lose their passwords, et cetera, et cetera. It's a pain. But if they had, but if you had their email addresses, you could register for them. We have had some people who have difficulty setting up school pages, for example, with really funky usernames. So you want them to use very kind of conservative usernames.
How do people handle student names? Do they go first name? Like, what's typical?
I use with my students. I actually go in and I create my students' accounts for them, and what I do is I just use their last name and first initial. And so that way it's easy for them to remember.
For the username.
Yeah. What's that?
For the username.
Yeah, for the username, because that goes a lot with what we do with our district, with how they log into the computers. They have to use their last name, first initial, and they're doing stuff with in their science classes they do some stuff on Moodle, and it's last name, first initial. So it's always the same thing, so that way they're not trying to remember, you know, 13 different usernames. It's all the same username. And then what I do is I just create a generic password, and then I tell them what their password is, or, you know, it's emailed to them, and then it's their responsibility to go in and change it if they want to change it to something different.
And about username, I think it's also, you know, it's an approach, because I use Youth Voices as part of their portfolio, you know, that they would show everybody. They would show grandma. They would show someone who they want to get a job from. They would show a college admissions officer. So I'm big on them using their name, too, and you know, owning that space instead of, you know, being like Butterfly Princess 25 you know, like I think it's really important that they claim that space and that's their own, and they should, you know, be able to share that publicly. No, but I teach seniors and juniors though.
Chris, it's not only, I mean, that's a really great approach, but it's also a requirement on the site. If anybody uses anything but their first name, I change it. So
there is that too.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, that goes for any.
It's about safety and not, you know, we're not about being anonymous on the site. We're about, right, you know, getting, being known on the site. So, yeah. There are other places you can be anonymous. So, but whether or not to use the last name would be an interesting question. We have always, up until last year, always said, you know, only adults have last names on there. And if you feel safer with that, that's cool.
Right.
But Chris, you started experimenting because of how you're using it with having kids have the option of using their last names. They're kind of older kids as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, those seem like little technical things, but that's sometimes the stuff that gets in the way of kids being able to publish and get their voices out there. So it's worth asking these questions and getting through them. We have tried to document some of this at P2PU study site called Youth Connected Learning with Youth Voices, I think it's called. But if you just go to P2PU and search for Youth Voices, you'll find. And there's a task in there. The language is funny. That talks about how to register kids and some of these options are laid out and so forth. So, and there and elsewhere, if you find something unclear and you try something different, please add to it, right? Change the document. All the documents we do at P2PU are open and you're welcome to, you know, mess them up as much as you'd like or make corrections and so forth. So there's that as well. A little curious about trying to address the how do I fit this into my curriculum question. And I'm not sure how to answer that or think about that because everybody's in a different place about that. Well, Jim, do you want to talk about that a little bit? How are you thinking? And yeah,
I don't think it'll I'm actually looking forward to it. From last year, I started with this when I was with the seniors. It started very personal with personal statement. And then we moved into more, you know, writing about books or things and I didn't have the equipment enough to get it, it all posted. But this year with the ninth grade, especially working with the social studies teacher that I do, I feel like we can put documents up there. I'm hoping that we can put documents up there that they can share or use as resources. And then we can generate the different kind of inquiries. And, you know, especially with the badges where they go through the steps of the inquiry and getting, you know, documenting things. So I feel like it, we already began with some personal work with, I also started with narrative form from the Common Core in where they narrated, you know, this idea of history, tying it to their own histories. I tried to make them write about history before they were born. So they actually had to go research or find out some things. So moving toward the next step of research, I feel like will be exciting on Youth Voices, especially if we can post things there that they can all get a hold of. I just wish I had the equipment in the class already because it's so, you know, it makes it 10 times easier to get all the documents to them to have it right there on Youth Voices or on PT, you know, P2PU, whatever. And I'm excited about the possibilities.
We're going to do everything we can to help you on that. But it sounds like from Jack's experience, you need to do more testing. That way you'll get computers.
Yes, right.
A little joke, though.
Yes, right. We're having trouble. You know, the testing is not the issue. We have the city put so many extra students into our school this year that everybody's so much time is being consumed by the like 75 extra students that they didn't expect to be in the school. I have classes of, you know, 38 and things like this that they're still rearranging. So it's been less about testing and more about just bodies, you know, hundreds of bodies in the room. They're in a So, and those issues this year seem somewhat overwhelming, and I'm really looking forward to Youth Voices simplifying my existence there. So curriculum seems like a pleasure compared to the rest of the other stuff.
So one of the things you referred to there, that technical thing, and then I wanted to ask a kind of harder question, is when you log in to Youth Voices now, and you go to your member page, there is a link called, the Youth Voices Crocodoc folder. And this is, Crocodoc is this kind of cool site where you can put up, I think you can put up Word documents and PDFs. We use mainly PDFs. And you can do it, you can do this in other ways in Google Docs and so forth, but it's not as, it doesn't preserve images as well as a PDF does. So once you create a PDF and put it up into a folder, and anybody can go there, again, it's way open, anybody can go there and create a new folder within a folder or whatever and add a PDF document. And then you can annotate those documents online, and anybody can go in and annotate them together. So it's a way to share documents and share our reading together. So lots of possibilities there. Chris, you're looking confused. I can see that face over there.
No, so, I was actually looking at the Crocdoc folder. I was trying to get a sense of lay of the land there.
So, and you do need to be logged in so that your name appears next to your annotations.
Is that a collaborative annotation they do then?
Yes. It's in that everybody's annotating on the same document. And you can reply to each other's annotations as well. So it's a nice tool.
It seemed to the potential with that stuff especially for the region-based stuff seems just enormously freeing. That addition this year or whatever you, I don't know when you added that, but that seems really exciting.
Well, and what's nice is that once a student starts, and this gets to some of the inquiry right. approach. But once a student starts a question or an issue that they're working on and they've found a few articles, I can, be doing something else and say, oh, there's a great article about gun right. violence. Let me throw that in the folder too. And then when they get there the next day, I can say, did you see that article I put there? Check that out. Right. So there's that kind of, and I'm hoping they start to do that for each other as well. So it's that kind of sharing that we're looking for. Mm-hmm.
Now, Paul, if I'm a new teacher to Youth Voices, mm-hmm. You've mentioned P2PU and Crocdoc folders. So probably want to keep it a little simpler and just kind of talk about Youth Voices, or is that just me? Like Eric, are you good with everything here?
I'm following along mostly. I've found Crocodocs. That looks awesome. I am wondering about this P2P something. Sounds like we're shooting each other with the pew, pew. Can someone throw the link for that in the chat or something?
Yeah, I'd love to. Okay, so here's, if you go to youthvoices.net/play, right? If you go to the play tab, mm-hmm. On the left side, you'll see a list of too many things, but we're always experimenting. But at least it's a limited universe. It's not an endless. I know it starts to feel like an endless universe. But there's those would be the 7 or 8, whatever it is, sites you might want to have kids hook up with.
Great.
I mean, and then there may be many others or a couple others. Like if you're doing a photography class, I wanted to ask Chris, are your kids using Flickr this year?
Yeah, my photography students are using Flickr, and then, the media people are starting to have more of a YouTube kind of presence. But they're using Flickr, and they're putting stuff fairly irregularly into the Youth Voices pool of Flickr.
which is cool if we can start using those in that pool, but I need to work on that. Clarifying that. So what's the answer to your question, Chris? What do you think?
The answer to my question?
Yeah. Are we doing too much, too many different places?
Well, I just meant talking about it right now.
Okay.
I like to sometimes just restrict myself to one place because I do have a question about, you know, like how to even enter in to badges. And I know I need to start going in there and playing around, but just with, you know, I think some of the questions were, how do I work just youth voices in to the, to my teaching. And I just wanted to make sure maybe we were getting a handle on that.
From my recollection from when I was sort of hooked into this, and this has been at least, what, 5 years ago? So who knows anymore? But and a couple of people have mentioned it already. It seems like the primary draw or the primary attraction is this chance to get outside of your small community in your school and give your students an authentic audience beyond those walls. And so it seems to me like is that still sort of the major, hate to use the word selling point, but the major draw for Youth Voices is that it's a community where students are empowered, they can talk to each other, and they can escape the confines of their immediate classroom.
Absolutely. And it's about having conversations across those.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say that it was a pretty big motivator for my kids when they put their first post up earlier this year. And then the next day we came back and revisited the site, and some of them were just blown away that, you know, there were people out there who, you know, were interested in what they had to say and were adding to the conversation. So, I mean, some of them really were highly motivated based on that and were pretty, eager to use it again. So, yeah, it's a big draw for my kids.
Jeremy, let's talk about, and it relates to all of this, I think, your memoir project. One of the things that happens, and I don't know exactly how you were planning to do this, but one of the things that happens is that teachers, when they first get on here, make a prompt for kids, and then the kids respond to that prompt. So in a sense, I think you were starting to do that with the memoirs, and what I did, and didn't consult with you at all, just did. Thank you for smiling. As I pulled your prompt off and put it into the missions, and then took the kids' comment and made it a post itself. And the reason that's important to say is that we want students to be writing student-facing work. In other words, they should, as they're writing, they should also be writing for other students, and not for teachers. And so that one thing right there kind of makes us question what our curriculum is, in a way, if they start writing for each other more. And seeing each other's writing and saying, "Oh, I want to do that too," or "That's an interesting thing to think about." Yeah, so that's one of the things that we want to sponsor and try to make happen.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to encourage my students to do was to get their writing out there. I didn't want them to think of it as something that, you know, where it was, okay, this is another assignment by me, or like you were saying, it was a prompt by me, because, you know, I mentioned earlier the 6-word memoir, then the Twitter memoir, and we did that scaffolding, you know, for about 2 weeks, so they kind of worked up to bigger memoirs, and, you know, and that's kind of why and that's what I didn't want to do with Youth Voices, because that had been addressed earlier on another session of Teachers Teaching Teachers about this really shouldn't be a space where teachers go and post an assignment where students do the assignment. And that's not what I really want. That's not what I want my students to do. What I was trying to do is encourage them to share their writing that they've already done in my classroom so they can get some feedback from other students. You know, and again, trying to do that without dangling a carrot out there for them too much. You know, like saying, hey, you can do this for extra credit. You know, I want them to be motivated to do that on their own. And I think the more students that actually go out there and, like Chris was saying, get responses from other students, I think there's going to be more students that are going to have conversations with each other in my classes and say, hey, I got this feedback from so-and-so that is in New York. And, you know, and that's what I want. I want that conversation to start happening, not only on Youth Voices, but within my classroom. So they're encouraging each other to get online and do that.
See you, Monica. Anyway. The, so here's one of the things that I think is the hardest. Let me put it this way. Writing about books, which we've all talked about, and I have my kids do too, is the least dialogical stuff that happens on Youth Voices. Let's put it that way. It's the least thing that causes conversation. Like you open it up and say, oh, they're reading, I'll use Chris as my example. They're reading 1984. I've never read 1984. How can I enter this conversation? You know, so that... that's an issue. That's hard. And it's hard for us to kind of synchronize when we're going to be reading the same books or whatever. We've tried that in the past. It's never kind of worked out. So I just want to put that out as a problem. I want kids to write about books, but I think we need to ask, you know, why? You know, what? And not just like, what is our purpose for having them write about those books? What do we want them to do with that?
Well, I feel obligated to answer. You know, I would say in more general, though, you know, like I think we all have them write about what they're reading. And so I often don't say just, you know, write about this book. There's a list of choices. Like in this most recent bit, I said, well, we have been reading this book, 1984, if you feel like it. And if they do that, it's incumbent upon them to make a connection to contemporary society, you know, which I think people can relate to. And I think that's the challenge with classics, you know, is how can we make them, how are they still relevant? So, you know, like that would be the challenge that I have to kids. And they know that if they're putting their stuff out there in this space, they want it to be read. But, you know, it could be a book, but it could be something, you know, a lot of them will say, hey, you know, I just, came across this this NCAA rule, and you know, I'm interested in that. Can I write about that? And it's like, well, yeah.
And that kid's going to get response faster than the kid writing about dystopian literature, which probably. You know, as a teacher, I you know, I'm teasing you, Chris, a little bit. I mean, I actually love some of those, and I like the connections they make. Just like they, I don't know if they're student facing, if I could use that language, and I'm
yeah.
And I just had a kid post this long thing about a book he read, and I don't think any young person's going to read that. I mean, I barely got through it, you know. But it was a valuable thing for him to do. And so I'm trying to figure out what format, you know, we want to use for writing about books. I mean, writing about your reading, writing about a topic, writing about, you know, Kobe Bryant is a fun and engaging thing, and kids respond to each other. But you know,
yeah, but I just have to. Can I just the Kobe Bryant? There's an automatic context in which they understand all of the signals, and it's much more difficult, I think, to universalize the signals of classic literature. But if we could somehow do that, they could respond if they could see it as, you know, as current as Kobe Bryant is, or I guess he's getting old anyway, but the challenge as teachers, it feels like to me, is to decode that, so it's not just, you know, hanging with icicles or ivory or something, that it's, you know, that it's much harder because the context has disappeared. And how do you make it more that I think, whether it's on Youth Voices or not, how to get them past the you know, it being old, you know, not as accessible, or not as these signs aren't clear. I don't think, I don't mean to be too whatever, but I don't think it's just Youth Voices. That's just such a a huge problem, that they're unwilling to fight through the the when the signs are slightly more difficult, I'm not saying that, I'm not blaming the students. I'm saying, how do you transcend a whole different sign system to them or something? It seems much more difficult.
Well, yeah, I mean, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I'm done.
Go ahead. I was just gonna, you know, go back to kind of some of what Chris was saying about the connection and relevance. I don't know that there's an easy way out of what you're talking about the problem of context and signals. They have to find a way to wrestle out of that bag, and there has to be a reason to want to do that. And I think that connection and that relevance that Chris is mentioning, finding ways to tie into stuff that actually matters and that's actually going on in my life, is the only draw or only reason that you would try to wrestle yourself out of that bag. And then that in turn also becomes the only reason that someone who isn't necessarily engaged by that particular book would want to be engaged by what you're saying, because you're saying something that's about you and your actual life, and that's probably relevant to me and my actual life if you're talking about something real. So I mean, I don't know. I haven't found another way to do any of that unless it's really coming back over and over and over again to what does this have to do? You know, that age-old question, like, when am I going to ever have to learn this, or why do I have to learn this? It's the best question that a student can ask. Mm-hmm. And the worst thing we can do is not help them discover that answer for themselves. I don't know.
I wonder if part of that discovery, too, then, is sort of giving them a forum to explore and sort of look at and talk about how they discover it, too.
Yep.
You know, what does it mean to talk about a current sports issue or whatever, you know, Lance Armstrong or whatever's happening? And then how do you sort of root that in some of the other things that we have to care about, whether it's, you know, citing text evidence or citing sources? Like, there's might be some way to have one start to inform the other so it has that authenticity, but then sort of maybe it's our job to try to wrap in some of those other things that we're concerned about at the same time, and then show them what that looks like when they're doing that back and forth out of the group that are also doing.
Yeah, I agree. I used to run a discussion board, and it was not as open as Youth Voices. It was closed within the school, but it was across a few different teachers and a few different classes. And I was teaching a 10th grade course that had the theme for the course was the true, the good, and the beautiful. And I had them looking at their TV shows and their magazine ads and their whatever and saying, you know, what is this saying is true or good or beautiful, and how do you know that? And then write to each other about that and whether or not you agree with what it's saying. And it took a good maybe half the year before they started to say anything of substance, of course, that you know, was beyond a few sentences. But you keep teasing out where they're making those insights and connections. And then you can bring in, like you're saying, how do you know that that's what this is saying? And you don't necessarily have to use the word cite your source or you know, give textual evidence, but that's what you're pushing them towards. And then over that time, you know, by the end, they were writing lengthy little diatribes about Dawson's Creek or whatever it was. But using the skills that I want them to use when we're doing an analysis of some other piece of text.
That's habitual. That's strong. It's a habit.
Right. But audience was important there, and connection to their immediate life was important there. And I think both of those are things that Youth Voices can provide opportunities for.
And I would have to say that like different kids need different entry points, mm-hmm. because, you know, like one kid was just really stunned, you know, one time when it was just, you know, write whatever's on your mind. And he's like, but, you know, how do I do what? And this is a bright kid, but he was just blown away. He's like, well, you know, he needed a little more guidance. So, you know, partly back to saying, you know, well, write about what you're reading, you know, is on the same list as, you know, write about your inquiry question. And for some mm-hmm. kids, it's easier to write about some stuff that I'm reading. For mm-hmm. other kids, you know, they would rather just, you know, talk about what they're really thinking about all the time. And so I found that, you know, like having just one prompt you know, like, let's say, write about the book, is a pretty limiting thing. And I think that's when it, you know, there's not good dialogue, if that's what I'm going to do, not good conversation. But I think if there's, you know, choices, then different kids seem to kind of key into different aspects of it.
So say that again, having one prompt, write about the book, doesn't give right. enough choice.
But right, so like,
what would the choices look like then?
So like the last time my students wrote on Youth Voices, I said, okay, we have been reading this book, 1984. You know, what are you thinking about? What does the book make you think about? And then I said, well, you know, some of you, that's not going to float your boat. So how about we read this book earlier, Unspun. Is there anything that still kind of is sticking with you with that book? And then I said, well, if neither of those two things work, how about writing about a burning question that you have? And then if, and then I finally said, you know, if these three don't work, then write about anything. And so, you know, like there were different entry points. There are kids who really are deep into 1984, you know, like that's all they want to talk about. Right. But you know, that doesn't appeal to everybody. So that's what I mean. Like, you know, there's different, there has to be different entry points for my students because there's so many different thinkers and,
So the so we one I always get to the this point and then I but it's important as we look at P2PU, right, and the whole notion, and we, you know, we can't necessarily do it, but please, if you can go there and have a kid mess around there, that'd be great. But one of the five challenges, right, in P2PU is responding to, we call it independent reading, right? It's too much about, and our guides around that are too much about read any book and respond to the theme character. You know, you can kind of imagine what those would be, and they're encouraged to do that. And sometimes they write interesting things, and they're reading interesting books. Other times not. Sometimes they're reading books that I assign, you know, and we assign together. But the idea is that if we could, in this P2PU site, kind of create a dystopian literature or take our curriculum from that and share that with each other, then there might be a way for my kids to say, oh, I'm playing this game, you know, and independent reading is part of it. And one of the options in that game is to do 1984. And Chris's students are doing that at the same time. So there's a way to kind of coordinate so that you can, we can use youth voices any way we want to. But there's also perhaps a curriculum that would allow us to work together more. I mean, I think that's the why right. for yeah. creating this thing. Mm-hmm. And I got to say, the badges are not. I've now given out 30 or 40 badges, and they're not that motivating. And I don't care. That's not the purpose of them. It's more a purpose of tracking where the students have been. And what's interesting about the badges is they end up being a digital portfolio and so forth. So that's the bigger purpose for them, it seems to me. And there's a lot of talk about that. But at least, I don't know where we are here, but I... But having said that, it just I'm hoping that we can kind of work on that issue that the because I think that's behind. We're all English teachers here, right? I think we are. That's behind that question of how do we fit this into our curriculum? Like for me, it is that curriculum because it's about research. It's about, you know, it's about open inquiry. And then the reading is just whatever you pick up. But I know that there are English curriculum that have, you know, established books, and there might be a way to at least do that together so that there's a community of people talking together. But we should go around. That's a really wildly meandering kind of thing I just said there. Who wants to try to pull this together and say what you're thinking now and how we can help you here at the end? Jack, why don't you start us off? We'll go backwards that way.
Okay.
Close off the show. Yeah.
Well, nice. I'm thinking sort of where I've been with students up till, you know, today, tomorrow. And they definitely have some writing that they've done related to books they're reading. But we've also started to talk about how they might find things that they'd want to read that they're interested in. So almost like how to start to cultivate their news feeds and whatnot. It's something I want to start to explore a little bit this year. And that might be something that sort of gives them those discussion points that would be outside of books and whatnot. So that might be the case.
They could actually ask for advice, like, what books do you know about that are about, you know, this thing I'm interested in?
Yeah, that could be too. But I think practically the starting point is going to be getting them to that first step. And I'm just sort of going through some of the stuff when I was looking at some of it the other day, with the idea of that first step of learning how to comment and react. And we've been doing some of that in our own sort of walled garden area. And I think it translates smoothly. So I think there's a little bit of a door. It's just a matter of pushing it from where we are into a more public place, which is really one of the big outcomes I'm sort of hoping for here.
Cool. Hey, using the comment guidelines, I think, is helpful, especially.
I've been stealing those for a while.
Super. I have so much to say, but the grid. The youthvoices.net/grid will get you to the, you know, the grid. It kind of tries to lay out some of the curricular ideas. And recently, this was a suggestion of Charlie Fried. Recently, I put on there a red post button that kind of indicates when you might post on Youth Voices. Because like you don't want to necessarily wait to the end of a project. You want to post after you read your first thing. You know, post that brief experience, and then maybe do a little more work and develop it. And you know, Chris is reclaiming your topic. I have them post that also. But as they're moving along, so there's some notion of when to post has been added to that. But there's a lot packed into those little lines, by the way. Jim, any thoughts?
Many thoughts. I don't know. I'm not sure what they are, but let's see. I'm really intrigued by what Chris was saying about the idea of, you know, individual students responding. I thought many times last year that the students got the biggest kick out of Youth Voices is when they were acknowledged in some way, you know, when they felt that they had been seen. Besides making contact with other students, and then I was thinking through literature, what a personal response it is when they're, you know, a real response to literature is very highly personal or individual, as Chris was saying. It seems like, I think that's what Chris was saying. Is that what Chris was saying? But so that those are floating through my head right now. That, and, you know, how to make use of Youth Voices for those sorts of responses somehow. And I really like the idea of they don't have to post. It doesn't have to be entirely finished. It can be in process and get a response. All those seem like, you know, very good. Now just get over to the school, Paul, and help me set up the machine.
Yeah, we'll try to do that. Okay. Jeremy.
A lot of things. One of the things I really like what Chris does with the different entries. I was, you know, thinking about that because when I have my students do their writing to the day, they have that option of choosing the topic that I give them, or they can go back and work on another piece, or they can just write about whatever they want to that's on their mind. I was thinking about that, and also thinking about this readers responding to what they're reading and posting some things on Youth Voices. I was thinking about right now, because my eighth graders are finishing up The Outsiders by S.E. Hinton. And it's a book that they can't put down, and which is phenomenal because I've got middle schoolers to read in one sense. But in another sense, they're kind of moving past the pace that I have them at. But I told them that I'll never discourage them from reading forward. I'm almost thinking that Youth Voices can be that outlet where they can – maybe they can put some ideas that they have about what they've been reading with The Outsiders. And see if they can get some responses from people, you know, and just my overall thought is I'm going to continue to get students onto Youth Voices, and we're going to continue to plug away at this because this is a really good site.
Cool.
It's going to be good. It's going to be real good.
This problem of, and one way to define it might be that too much of the writing about books is for teachers, and maybe we could ask the students, like, what do you know, what kind of writing about the book might you want to do for other kids? You know, we could present this problem to them a little bit. But
yeah.
Eric or Chris? counting down here, but go ahead.
I don't really have a summary or anything like
that. Doesn't matter. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Brad. I'm really intrigued by the idea of badges and something that Jack said about being able to use badges as a type of scaffolding for students. Mm-hmm. I don't know. That's what I'm going to go away thinking about.
So, cool.
Thank you.
Thank you. Chris?
Well, I would say that sometimes my kids will say, you know, well, rather than, you know, post a discussion right now, what if I do like a really detailed comment? And more and more what I've learned, I guess, my learning throughout this is that, you know, I used to think it was all about a blog post or it was all about the discussion. And more I realized that really, you know, like when a kid gets an unsolicited comment that's a thoughtful comment, you know, that does so much for their engagement on the site and for them as a writer. Mm-hmm. So, you know, oftentimes I'll say, you know, whatever you do today, make it really good, whether it's a comment or a discussion, because really sometimes, like, back to the book idea, if everybody posts something about the book, then we've got all these individual things hanging out there. And what's just as or more valuable is, you know, like a conversation around one of those things. So that was one of the epiphanies, I guess, for me, is that a comment equals a good discussion.
And going way back to Jack, you know, having kids comment two or three times before they post on the site is a great thing to ask them to do. But, you know, because then they get involved in it. So that's a good way to start. Thank you all. I'm glad this was breathless and guys night. Thank you. And, we will put this up at edtechtalk.com, which is one of the channels of the World Bridges Network. Thanks to Dave Cormier and Jeff Lebo for inspiring us and getting us going in all that community. And looking around here, thanks to the Writing Project, too. Looks like all of us are Writing Project folks. So great. We'll see you online. Talk to you again. Thanks, guys.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.